Welcome back to the Crypto Daily, everyone. Today, we're diving headfirst into the wild world of Bitcoin. And joining me is Ethan Blocktrend, a seasoned crypto analyst. Ethan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Always a pleasure to talk shop.
So, Ethan, Bitcoin has been on a roller coaster ride lately. We've got BlackRock's CEO sending shockwaves through the market, China's economic earthquake, and whispers of a potential liquidity tsunami. What's your take on all this?
It's a perfect storm brewing, Sarah, that's for sure. Let's unpack it. BlackRock's Larry Fink is waving a caution flag about the Fed's interest rate cuts. The market's expecting aggressive easing, but Fink's saying, hold your horses. He sees room for cuts, just not as much as everyone's betting on.
Right, and that directly impacts risk on assets like Bitcoin. Then we have China, which always seems to keep the crypto world guessing.
Exactly. There's this anticipation of massive stimulus measures from China to jolt their economy back to life. Analysts are calling it a liquidity tsunami that could send Bitcoin to new all-time highs. It's like everyone's waiting with bated breath for the other shoe to drop.
And to add another layer of intrigue, we've got geopolitical tensions flaring up in the Middle East, sending investors scrambling for safe haven assets. Bitcoin, often touted as digital gold, took a hit.
It really challenges the narrative of Bitcoin as a safe haven, doesn't it? When uncertainty strikes, and it seems to be striking from all sides, investors retreat to familiar ground. But Sarah, this could be a temporary blip. The fundamentals of Bitcoin remain strong, and these macroeconomic factors, while impactful, don't diminish its long-term potential.
That's a great point, Ethan. It's easy to get caught up in the daily swings, but zooming out and looking at the bigger picture is crucial. Speaking of regulations and global trends, Ethan, Robinhood's making some interesting moves in Europe. They're rolling out crypto transfer features for their EU customers, essentially allowing them to move their crypto assets in and out of the Robinhood app.
It's a smart move, Sarah. While the U.S. regulatory landscape remains murky, Europe, particularly with MiCA on the horizon, is shaping up to be a crypto-friendly hub. Robinhood's capitalizing on that, positioning themselves strategically in a market that's potentially as big as the U.S.
And it's not just about trading anymore. It's about self-custody, DeFi integration. This move gives European users more control over their crypto, aligning with the growing trend of decentralization.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how this impacts Robinhood's user base in Europe. Are they attracting more crypto-savvy users who value self-custody? Or is this simply a natural progression of their platform, catering to a broader audience?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It'll be fascinating to track their growth in the EU and see if this move gives them a competitive edge in a market that's already quite saturated. Speaking of Europe, the EU's blockchain sandbox is really picking up steam. They've just onboarded 41 regulators for their second cohort. That's a significant jump in participation, isn't it?
It's huge, Sarah. It signals that regulators are increasingly recognizing the need to understand and address the unique challenges and opportunities presented by blockchain. The EBSE provides that crucial space for dialogue and experimentation.
And it's not just talk. They're supporting 20 real-world blockchain projects, providing legal guidance, and fostering collaboration between innovators and regulators. This hands-on approach is what sets it apart, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's about bridging the gap between theory and practice. By working directly with projects like IOTA, which focuses on identity solutions and DeFi, regulators can gain practical insights into how these technologies can be implemented safely and effectively.
And it's not just the sandbox making waves. The Börse Stuttgart Group, Germany's second largest exchange, just completed a successful blockchain settlement test with the ECB.
That's right. They managed to cut settlement times from 2 days down to minutes using tokenized securities. This is a major proof of concept, showcasing the potential of blockchain to revolutionize traditional financial infrastructure.
And it's not just about speed. The test also highlighted the enhanced efficiency, security, and reduced counterparty risk that blockchain brings to the table. These are significant advantages that can't be ignored.
Exactly. And the fact that they partnered with major banks like Commerzbank and Deutsche Bank adds even more weight to the findings. This wasn't some isolated experiment. It was a real-world simulation with major players.
Speaking of institutional interest, Marathon Digital Holdings is making some interesting moves, particularly in how they're positioning themselves within the Bitcoin mining landscape. They're not just another miner, Ethan. They seem to be strategically positioning themselves for the convergence of Bitcoin mining and AI.
You're right, Sarah. Marathon, under Fred Thiel's leadership, is taking a multi-pronged approach. They're focusing on vertical integration, owning more of their infrastructure, and developing their own tech stack, including their own mining pool and even a Bitcoin L2 called Enduro. This gives them more control and potentially higher profits compared to miners relying on third-party solutions.
And their global footprint is also strategic. By diversifying across continents, they're mitigating risks associated with regional energy prices, regulations, and even political climates. It's a smart move, especially with the upcoming U.S. elections and the uncertainty surrounding crypto regulations.
Absolutely. And let's not forget their emphasis on liquid cooling technology. This not only addresses environmental concerns, but also positions them perfectly for the high energy demands of AI infrastructure. They're essentially future-proofing their operations.
It's interesting how Thiel sees the synergy between Bitcoin mining and AI, particularly at the edge. He argues that Bitcoin miners can provide a stabilizing force for the grid, balancing out the fluctuating energy demands of AI workloads. It's an intriguing concept.
It is. And this symbiotic relationship could be a game changer for both industries. Imagine a future where Bitcoin miners are essentially subsidizing renewable energy use for AI applications. That's a powerful narrative, especially in today's environmentally conscious world.
And then there's their HODL strategy, which seems to be more nuanced than simply accumulating Bitcoin. They're strategically timing their market purchases and infrastructure investments based on their outlook for Bitcoin's price. It's a dynamic approach that considers both the short-term and long-term potential of Bitcoin.
It's a smart play. They're not just blindly mining and hoping for the best. They're actively managing their Bitcoin treasury, leveraging market opportunities to maximize their returns. It's a more sophisticated approach than we've seen from some other miners.
And their meeting with Donald Trump, regardless of one's political stance, highlights the growing importance of Bitcoin mining as a national strategic asset. The idea of the U.S. holding Bitcoin reserves, like gold, is intriguing, to say the least.
It's a bold idea, and whether it gains traction or not, it underscores the shifting geopolitical landscape and the role Bitcoin is playing in it. Thiel's point about the potential for the U.S. to influence global Bitcoin transactions through its mining dominance is thought-provoking, to say the least.
Indeed. And their decision to imprint Made in the USA in the blocks they mine is a fascinating development. It speaks to a growing sense of nationalism within the Bitcoin mining space, and it'll be interesting to see if it gains traction.
It's a bold move, and it could be a double-edged sword. While it might appeal to some investors and users, it could also raise concerns about fungibility and potentially even lead to a two-tiered Bitcoin market. It's a development worth watching closely.
Speaking of sustainability and ethical sourcing, a recent article caught my eye about how blockchain and AI are being used to help coffee farmers, specifically smallholders, navigate the upcoming EUDR regulations.
That's interesting. EUDR is a big deal for any producer wanting to access the EU market. But for smallholder coffee farmers, who often lack the resources and infrastructure to meet these stringent traceability requirements, it can be a significant hurdle.
Exactly. The article highlights a company called Demetra, which uses a combination of blockchain, IoT, and AI to create a transparent and traceable supply chain for coffee. Their platform, Connected Coffee, allows farmers to record everything from the origin of their beans to the farming practices they use, all verifiable on the blockchain.
So it's like a digital passport for their coffee beans, proving they meet the EUDR standards. That's smart. It not only helps farmers comply with regulations, but also gives consumers confidence in the ethical sourcing of their coffee.
Right? And it goes beyond just compliance. Demetra also uses AI to provide farmers with real-time data and insights to optimize their yields and reduce their environmental impact.
It's fascinating how these technologies can empower even the smallest producers. It levels the playing field, giving them access to tools and resources that were previously out of reach.
Absolutely. And it's encouraging to see companies like Alcaf and Orozco partnering with Demetra, demonstrating that sustainability and ethical sourcing are becoming increasingly important across the entire supply chain. Speaking of evolution in gaming, an article in Web3 Gamer caught my eye. It talks about how the tap-to-earn mechanics, though popular, might be due for an upgrade. Ethan, what are your thoughts on this? Is tapping on its way out?
Well, Sarah, the article quotes Jeezy from Mantle, and he brings up an interesting point about the simplicity of tap-to-earn. While it's been incredibly accessible, it can get a bit, shall we say, monotonous. The core concept of easy entry is great, but the gameplay needs more depth.
Absolutely. The article mentions swipe to earn and jump to earn as potential successors. Do you think these are just gimmicks, or do they hold real potential?
It's too early to say for sure, Sarah. The key will be how these new mechanics are integrated. Are they just slight variations on tapping, or do they fundamentally change how we interact with the game? We've seen this evolution before, even in mobile gaming. Remember when endless runners were all the rage? The successful ones innovated beyond just running.
Good point. The article also highlights the success of Hamster Combat, a tap-to-earn game that's gone viral. What do you make of its popularity? Is it just hype, or is there something more to it?
Hamster Combat is a fascinating case study. It's simple, addictive, and taps into the meme culture. But the article also mentions that the developers don't see it as a primary source of income. It's more about entertainment and community building, which I think is a healthy approach.
That's refreshing to hear. Too often, the focus is solely on earning, which can overshadow the actual gaming experience. Speaking of shifting focus, the article also talks about Sky Mavis, the company behind Axie Infinity, launching Axie Pals, a Web3 Tamagotchi. What do you think about this move?
It's a brilliant pivot, Sarah. Axie Infinity was a pioneer in the play-to-earn space, but it faced its share of challenges. With Axie Pals, they're tapping into nostalgia, offering a more casual and engaging experience. It's like having a digital pet that lives on your screen and interacts with your online world. That's a compelling concept.
It seems like DeFi protocols are constantly innovating to make their platforms more accessible. We've got another interesting development today, Ethan. Sin Futures, a DeFi derivatives protocol, has just launched something called the Sin Futures Vault. Have you had a chance to look into this?
Yes, Sarah, I've been following this closely. The Sin Futures Vault is essentially a yield aggregator for their platform. Users can deposit their margin tokens into these vaults, and third-party providers will then use those funds to execute various trading strategies, aiming to generate yield.
So, it's like a simplified way for users to put their assets to work without needing to be expert traders themselves? That sounds like it could be a game changer for DeFi adoption.
Exactly. The barrier to entry in DeFi can be quite high. You need to understand different protocols, strategies, and risk management. The Sin Futures Vault aims to abstract a lot of that complexity away. It's like the difference between actively managing your own stock portfolio and investing in a mutual fund.
That's a great analogy. But as with any investment, there are always risks involved. The article does mention that users should be aware of the potential for losses. What are your thoughts on the risk profile of this new feature?
You're absolutely right, Sarah. No investment is risk-free, especially in the DeFi space. The performance of these vaults will depend on the skills and strategies of the third-party providers. It's crucial for users to do their own research, understand the risks involved, and choose providers with a proven track record. Transparency is key here.
Well said. It's always essential to proceed with caution and do your homework. Ethan, this has been a fascinating discussion on the evolving landscape of DeFi and the continuous efforts to make it more accessible. From play-to-earn games to yield-generating vaults, it's clear that innovation in this space is relentless. That wraps up today's episode of Crypto Daily. Thanks for joining me, Ethan, and thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. Until next time, stay informed and stay ahead of the curve.